All right, good afternoon, everyone. So it's an incredible zechus to be able to begin our learning together, I guess our formal learning together, in the beautiful and holy city of Shiloh. And because so much of the impact of this event is going to take place around the Makom HaMishkan, we're going to see in just a little while, Hillel is going to guide us in a beautiful tour to see the previous site of where the Mishkan stood. You know, the Mishkan, the precursor to the Beis HaMikdash, was a central place for tefillah, a central place for supplication for Klal Yisrael, really until a permanent Beis HaMikdash was built. But what I really want to focus you on is, I think, perhaps one of the most riveting episodes that occurs within a Mishkan. If you take a look in your source books, again, we're on page number one, source number one. This is an episode that begins in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph. And we're not going to go through all of this. I'm going to give you kind of just, as we'll call Rashi, a little bit of an outline. The source books are yours. You'll fill in the blanks for whatever we don't cover together. But again, the Navi says the following, Vayi ish echad min haramasayim sofim mehar Ephraim, ushmo Elkanah ben Yerucham ben Elihu ben Tochol ben Sof Ephrasi. So the Navi introduces us to a man from Har Ephraim who is known as Elkanah. What's special about Elkanah? Number two, Velo Shtei Noshim. Elkanah had two wives, Shem Achas Chana, v'Shem Hashenis Pnina, v'Yihil Pnina Yiladim, u'Lechana Ein Yiladim. So ultimately, again, the Navi tells us, this is on page one, source number two, so the Navi tells us that Pnina has children, Chana did not have children. So again, that of course is going to be a very important part of our Shiloh narrative, our Shiloh experience. And number three, v'Ala Ha'isha Hu Me'iro Mi'amim Yamima, Lishtachavos v'lizboach la'Hashem tzevakos b'shilom. So ultimately, again, this man would come. Once we'll discuss yamim yamina means a couple of times throughout the year, and he would come up to Shiloh lishtachavos to prostrate himself and to go ahead and to offer karbonos. Sham shnei bnei eli chafni upinchas kohanim la'Hashem. So I want to show you something amazing. So the Navi tells us, remember again, there's a mitzvah to be ol regel. There's a mitzvah to make the three pilgrimage festivals three times a year, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. And of course, we're most familiar with that in terms of the Beis HaMikdash. But before the Beis HaMikdash, that obligation stood in effect by the Mishkan as well. So the Navi tells us that there's a man, Elkanah, that's going ahead and making a pilgrimage festival to Shiloh three times a year. What's the obvious question you have?
Why Shiloh?
Okay, so you know the answer to that. Why Shiloh? Because the Mishkan is there. So what's the next obvious question?
Why not Jerusalem?
So, okay, because the Mishkan wasn't in Yerushalayim. Remember, again, Yerushalayim only becomes the center for the pilgrimage festivals after Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash. But again, think about this in just a moment. I'm going to attribute this to Jed. Why does the Navi have to tell me? It's not fair. Linda was here earlier. She's not jet lagged. Right? But excellently, everybody else would have gotten that as well. Right? A good night's sleep gets you, you see? Again, why does the Navi have to tell me that Elkanah is making the pilgrimage festival to Shiloh? After all, again, isn't everyone making the pilgrimage festival to Shiloh? The fact that the Navi needs to single him out indicates that there's something unique about his ascent to Shiloh. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi number four writes the following: Va'ala Lashon Hova Haya Ole Mizman Moed Lemoed LeShiloh Umedrash Agada Bederach Haya Ole B'Shanazu. So Rashi HaKadosh understands that the Navi is trying to tell us that not only did Elkanah ascend to Shiloh, but interestingly enough, he would take a different way to Shiloh each time. So every single yomtiv that he went to Shiloh, he never took the same path twice. And if you take a look at number 5, the Radak says, Va'ala, Kein haya oseh b'chol shana v'shana, shaya ole l'Shiloh l'zbach, u'mashar mi'iro lomar, shahaya mizariz b'nei iro la'alos. That every single time Elkanah would go ahead and try and come up to Shiloh, he would try to encourage the people of his city to come with him. Now both Rashi and the Radak are really basing themselves on an incredible medrash in number 6. The medrash number 6 writes the following: Elkanah v'ishto banav. Listen to this. This is a gripping medrash. V'ach Yosef v'chol krovav hayama'al le'imel l'regel. Every single time Elkanah would be olerag, he would come to Shiloh. He would come to this place. He would bring his extended family with him. Uboim, listen to this. Uboim belanim berechova shal'ir.
So Elkanah could not make the trip from Har Ephraim all the way to Shiloh in one shot. He would have to stay overnight somewhere. So amazingly enough, wherever he stayed, he would never ask for home hospitality. Instead, he would lodge with his family in the street. It means they would bring a tent, they would set up a little camping expedition in the middle of the major thoroughfare of the city. So what does this mean? Bahayusholin also lehechan telchu. So can you imagine, right? You're in your city, and this guy Elkanah shows up with his wives, with his children, with his extended mishpacha. And presumably, Klal Yisrael, you know, again, we're very hospitable people. People were asking him to stay over all the time. He said, no, thank you. We have accommodations. And he would set up, like, a little tent city in the middle of the major thoroughfare of the city. So people were asking him, excuse me, Elkanah, where are you going? Va'omrim, I'm in number 6, second line. Lebeis Hashem Shebeshila. So he said to them, I'm going to the house of God, which was situated in Shiloh. Shemisham Teitse Torah U'mitzvos. It is from the house of Hashem, from the Mishkan in Shiloh, from which Torah, from which mitzvah, spiritual guidance. We understand that the Mishkan, and then later on the Beis HaMikdash, was not simply a shul. It was to be the spiritual epicenter of the Jewish people. So they would ask Elkanah, where are you going? He said, I'm going to the place from which all Torah, all mitzvahs, and mitzvah, I'm going to Shiloh. But look at these next words. Va'atem, lama lo savo imanu v'nelech yachad. And Elkanah says to the people, do you want to come with? Would you like to come with us? We're going to Shiloh. So first of all, there's two amazing things over here. You see how distant the general populace was from the Mishkan and by extension from many aspects of religion. It was a novel thing that Elkanah was traveling to Shiloh. No one, I shouldn't say no one else, but very few people were being Ola Regel. So what did Elkanah do? Elkanah was the first Chabadnik. Elkanah goes ahead, right? But he didn't ask, did you put on tefillin? Instead, what does he say? Did you go to Shiloh? Right? Did you go up to the Makom HaMishkan? Did you offer your karbanos? Did you learn your Torah? Did you do your mitzvos? So what he did, but here's what's amazing. He did so in a beautifully non-aggressive way. All he did was, is he placed himself in a way that people couldn't avoid seeing him. That's why he chose to sleep in the street. So people would say, hey, what's going on over here? I'm going to Shiloh. Do you want to come with? But listen to these next lines. He says, Miyad, I'm in number 6, third line, in middle of the line, right after the question mark. So Elkanah asked him, would you like to come with me? Miyad, Einehem Mishagros Demos. People's eyes, when he asked them, do you want to come with me to Shiloh? Their eyes welled up with tears. Omrim Lahem, Nelech Imachem. They said to Elkanah, really? Do you think we could really come with you? See, this Medrash is especially gripping because this tells you the real koach of a Jew. Every single Jew is holy. Just some of us know about our holiness. Some of us don't yet know about our holiness. Some of us have found our holiness and some of us are still on the path of exploration. And the beautiful part is all you need to do is open up the door of spirituality for a Jew and a Jew will always take it. It's just the difference was no one ever asked these precious neshamas, do you want to come to Shiloh? I know what you're going to say. What are you going to say? Good. Right? You're going to say that, one second, why do you need an invitation to Shiloh? Shiloh's open to everyone. The Mishkan's open to everyone. Because, you know, sometimes some people, for whatever the reason, don't feel part of the collective. Sometimes people don't feel part of the family. Sometimes people don't feel part of the people. And all you need to do is extend your hand. All you need to do is extend an invitation. All you need to do is show them a little bit of love and they'll come running. Because everyone wants a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone wants a connection to their fellow members of Klal Yisrael. Everybody wants a connection to Torah Mitzvot. Some of us know we want it. Some of us don't yet know we want it. But all of us want it. So Elkanah says, do you want to come? And the people literally begin to cry. Do you think we could really come with you to Shiloh? But Omrim Lahen, hey. Elkanah said, absolutely. So listen to how the Medrash ends. Av the Shana Habo Chamisha Batim. So the first year, he got 5 families to come. L'shana Cheres Aseres Batim. Next year, he got 10 families to come. At Shehaya Kulam, page 2, Olin. Until finally, again, Elkanah got all of them. Now, what does all of them mean? So all of them never means all of them, but all of them means a lot more than what was coming before. And I just want to tell you, we could spend a whole day as long as they keep on replenishing the food. But we could plan a whole day because there's so much in this medrash. This medrash also teaches us, you know, there are those of us here who want to move mountains, who want to accomplish great things in life. But you know what happens? If you try to move mountains by lifting up the mountain, you know what happens? You throw out your back and you're no good for anyone. If you want to move mountains, the way you move mountains is you start by moving pebbles. And after you move a couple of pebbles, you move a large couple of larger stones, and slowly but surely, see, the difference is all of us want instantaneous success. So I want to lift up the mountain, move it to the new place, and shkaya, I'm done, move on to the next project. Life doesn't work that way. We should all move mountains, but one pebble, one stone at a time. It's a lot longer, a lot more tedious, but that's how you get the job done. Se'elkanah feels it's his sacred responsibility to galvanize and energize Klal Yisrael. And how does he do it? How does he do it? Literally, one mishpacha at a time. One. So first year he got 5 families to come to Shiloh. Second year he got 10 families to come to Shiloh. Until the Medrash says, until everybody was coming to Shiloh. Now again, and that's of course a little hyperbolic. He wasn't getting everybody. But the point is, one pebble, one stone, one mishpacha at a time, and he was accomplishing great things. Ubedarach shaya ola shanazu, lo haya ola shanacharis. Every single year Elkanah chose a different route to come up to this sacred place. Amulah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen to how beautiful this is. Elkanah, Atal Hechrata Yisrael Lekaf Zechus. Elkanah, you went ahead and you allowed Klal Yisrael to be judged meritoriously because you inspired them. V'chancham mitzos, v'chanakta mitzos, and you educated them with mitzos. V'zochu rabim ayotcha, and you are mezakeh the rabim. You energized the collective to do good things. So we're going to discuss, by the way, we don't have a lot of time to get into all of this because you have to leave soon, but there's a fascinating machlokes in the Medrash as to who is it that's responsible for Shmuel, right? Who is me? Because remember again, Elkanah and Chana are Shmuel's parents. How do you get a son like Shmuel? So everyone tries to say it's Chana, and I'm a little bit nervous to say that it's not Chana, given that I'm outnumbered, right? But again, the Medrash says it was Elkanah. Now, of course, the real answer is going to be, it's both. But what we're going to see is that both Elkanah and Chana bring something dramatically different to the table. The one common denominator that this power couple had was tenacity. Both of them, when they set their goals on something, were unwilling to lose sight of what they wanted. Again, in dramatically different ways. Elkanah says, I have to connect my brothers and sisters to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that connection has to take place in this sacred space in Shiloh by the Mishkan. And I'm not going to give up until I do it. And it's tedious, and it's arduous, and it's uncomfortable, and it's inconvenient, but guess what? No one ever accomplished anything great by remaining in a cocoon or in a bubble of comfort. Accomplishing great things requires us to go out of our comfort zone. Accomplishing great things requires us sometimes giving up certain personal luxuries that I would like because I need to devote my resources, my time, and my abilities to others. But says the Medrash, do you want to know where you get a Shmuel from? Remember, who is Shmuel HaNavi? Again, well, Short Hill is going to tell us more later on. But Shmuel HaNavi, you know, we equate Shmuel with Moshe and Aaron. You know the common difference between Moshe and Aaron is that they were selfless leaders in dramatically different ways. Aaron was filled with love for Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu gave up everything for Klal Yisrael. He gave up his wife. He gave up his children. What do we know about Moshe Rabbeinu's children? What do we know about them? We know their names. That's pretty much all we know about them. And the Torah gives us their genealogy. Were they great? Were they not so great? Did they accomplish anything? No idea. The truth is, they disappeared into the sands of obscurity. And the reason they did so is because they didn't have a father at home. That's not because Moshe Rabbeinu was out playing golf. Moshe Rabbeinu devoted himself selflessly to Klal Yisrael. That sometimes is the price of leadership. Shmuel HaNavi. What does Shmuel HaNavi do? You know, it's interesting. Rav Soloveitchik discusses the concept of tshuva. And he says, if you really want to understand the concept of tshuva, he says it comes from a pasuk by Shmuel HaNavi. Pasuk says, "Uteshuva so harama." Shmuel HaNavi was the first circuit judge. He wasn't just a Navi, he was also a shofet. He was the first circuit judge. He went around to the people. Now you'll say to yourself, that's ridiculous. What should have happened? If you need the prophet, you go to the prophet. Right? And again, would anyone have faulted Shmuel HaNavi for saying, listen, here are my office hours, here's the time that I'm in session, right? Come by, make an appointment, I'd love to see you. But he doesn't do that. He leaves his family for the entire year, and he goes community to community. Where did he get that from? Where did he get that from? That's the Yerusha from his father. Because he grew up with this. He saw this. What did Elkanah do? Elkanah said, if you want to connect with Klal Yisrael, if you want to inspire the masses, you have to take the inspiration to them. You can't wait for them to come to the inspiration. Because the truth is, it's not that people don't want the inspiration. It's just that what? Everyone's too busy. What am I busy with? I'm not sure. I just know that I'm very busy. I'm very busy. Right? Will you be busy tomorrow? Yes. With what? I don't know, but I know I'm going to be busy. Right? And next week, and is there going to be any time, like a good time in the next 10 years when you're not going to be busy? No, it's going to be a very busy decade. No time. No one has time for anything. Of course, we have plenty of time. We just sometimes mevazbeis hazman. Sometimes we waste our time. But Elkanah understood that if you want to inspire the people, you have to take inspiration to them. This was Shmuel HaNavi. He took the inspiration to the people. But let's skip a little bit. So that's Elkanah. That's Elkanah. So just so you understand, there was a major Jewish renaissance that occurred here in Shiloh. Of course, again, it was centered around the Mishkan, because the Mishkan, like the Beis HaMikdash later on, was the epicenter of Jewish life. That Jewish renaissance took place in this very spot. Skip down a little bit. So, okay, look at number 7. We won't skip. I'll just read it quickly. So the Nabi now describes the incredible tension that's happening within the family of Elkanah. Penina, Baruch Hashem, is blessed with children. Hannah is not blessed with children. As we can only imagine, the pain this must have caused Hannah on a daily basis, but of course that pain was exacerbated and amplified whenever they were Ola Regel to the Mishkan. Why? Because it was a family experience. Elkanah would go and offer up his karbanos. He would give out portions. They would give out to Penina, to her sons, everybody's sitting around. It's so beautiful. It's so wonderful. And Hannah feels all alone. And again, there's an incredible friction between Hannah and Penina, which is not our topic for today. Skip to number 11. Vayomer la Elkanah isha, Hannah lama tivki, v'lama lo sochli. And what's so beautiful about this pasuk is you hear the love between Elkanah, the husband, and Hannah, his wife. And Elkanah realizes, he understands what his wife wants, he understands what it is, what she needs, in order to feel whole. But he also knows that for whatever the reason, it's not happening. So he says, Chana, why are you crying? V'lama lo sochli, why won't you eat? V'lama yiro levavech, halo anochi tov lach me'asara banu. So Elkanah says such a beautiful statement. I love you so much, and I love you more than 10 sons. The love that I have for you is more than you would even have from a family filled with children. So of course, again, we understand such beautiful words, but they're no consolation for Hannah. They're no consolation, because this is not about love. It's not just about love. It's about a feeling of fulfillment. It's about a maternal, a feminine self-actualization. That no matter how much her husband loves her, there's going to be a part of her that's lacking if she doesn't have this bracha. Skip to number 13. So remember, the Navi points out, this scene, by the way, played itself out over and over and over. It was always the same thing. Hannah and Penina have some type of falling out. There's some type of friction. What Penina's motivations were is interesting. Machlokis and Chazal. Not our topic for today. But every single year, so you have to understand, every time there's like a split screen dynamic. Every single year, Elkanah is more successful in increasing the Aliyah L'Regel, right? Every single year is getting more people to come. And of course, the more people that come, probably the greater the angst and the pain of Hannah. The more mishpachos, the more families she sees, the more painful this experience becomes for her. Until finally it hits its peak in number 13. V'atokam Chana acharei achlo b'shilo, v'acharei shasol, v'eli ha-kohen yoshev al-kisei mezuzas heichal Hashem. Chana eats something, she gives him grudge, fine, I'll eat, I'll drink a little bit. She gets up, and she goes into the Mishkan. She goes into the Mishkan. Page 3. So what happens here? Number 15, I'm just skipping because of time. Number 15, the hi maras nefesh. And Chana, you have to understand, that phrase, maras nefesh, doesn't just mean sad. It doesn't just mean despondent. In reality, it means broken. She's a broken woman. V'himaras nefesh v'tispala al Hashem Ubafo Tifke. And she goes out and she cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And amazingly enough, the Gemara number 16, which I'm just going to tell you outside, we learn a very incredible idea from Chana, which is that even sometimes, for whatever the reason, the gates of heavens are closed to our prayers. Sometimes there is a supplicatory barrier that prevents our tefillos from penetrating on high, for whatever the reason. But yet the Gemara says there is one thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can never say no to, and that's genuine tears. When a Jew sheds genuine tears, those tears ascend to the highest levels, ascend to the Kisya Kandri, Bamasha Olam, cannot ignore those tefillos. And number 17, Vatidor Neder Vatomer Hashem Tzibakos, Imro O Sira Ba'ami Amosecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you see my suffering, Uzechartani, remember me, Velo Sishka Ches Amosecha, don't forget me, Venasata La Amoscha Zera Anoshim, give to your maidservant, offspring of man, Unisativ La Hashem Kol Yemei Chayav, I will give him to God all the days of his life, Umora Lo Ya'ala Al Rosho. So this is amazing. Hannah in one breath asks for a child. So one would have assumed that's what? Of course, if she wants it, every mother has difficulty with one basic dynamic, which is separating from children, right? So some mothers have bigger problems, some mothers have lesser problems. This often is more manifest in mothers-in-law. There's a whole discussion with this. And I don't know if my mother-in-law is listening to this. I think it's going to be okay. But Hannah, on one hand, asks for a child, and then what does she say in the next breath? If you give me the child, I'm giving him back to you. Do you understand the selflessness in that? If you give me the bracha, it's not a bracha for me, Ribono Shel Olam. I'm asking you to give me a bracha so I could give you something. This is the selflessness of Chana. See, everyone thinks Chana just davened for a child. No. Chana said, Ribono Shel Olam, I can give you more nachos. I can give you something great if you just give me the building blocks. You give me the chomer. You give me, right? You give me the child, and I will partner with you to fashion him into something magnificent, something great. Give me so that I can give you. Number 19. The Chana medaberes ali, but just as an interesting aside, in number 18, the Gemara actually has an interesting machlokes, just about when Chana asks for Zera Anoshim. What was she asking for? So one opinion, the Gemara says she was asking for her son who was a tzaddik. A tzaddik. So the other opinion, which seems to be the majority opinion, says Zera Anoshim just means a regular guy. I don't need my son to be a gadol hadar. Just give me a child, and I will take the responsibility to shape him into something great. Because what Chana recognized is that greatness is not something that is conferred. Greatness is something that is earned. So just give me Zera Anoshim. You don't have to give me the next gadol hadar. Just give me the child, and I, as the mother, will do the work. I, as the mother, will partner with you. Number 19. And with this, we'll conclude. One more source. V'chani midaberes aliba. Chana is speaking her heart. Rak svaseha naos v'kolo lo yishamea. We know, of course, that Tfilas Chana, the prayer of Chana, was unique, and that seems to be the first recorded prayer in Tanakh that was not an audible one. The classic form of prayer. This is very different. We don't think this way because when we think about tefillah, we think about Shemona Esrei, and the halacha of Shemona Esrei, Shemona Esrei must be said in an undertone. But again, biblical prayer up until Chana was audible supplication. The emotional was talking. Excuse me, the person would be talking out loud. Chana apparently was the first person on record who davened, but who davened in an undertone. The kolo yishana bach shevel eli v'shikora. Eli thought she was drunk. Now, by the way, just as an interesting aside, remember again, Chana gives him quite well. Actually, take a look at 22. Fine, you're twisting my arm. I'll just do two more, then I'm going to stop. Take a look at 22. Vayomer Eleha Eli, Admasai Tishtakarin, Hasiri Esinei Ela. So Eli says, what are you doing here? Like, get out of here. How can you come into the Mishkan drunk? Vatan Chana Vatomer Lo Adoni. So, first of all, again, Chana gives him, we're going to see, Chana speaks to the Kohen Gadol with pretty stark. I mean, this is like only a Jewish woman could do this, right? This was a strong Jewish woman who essentially said to him, in a very respectful way, you've got it all wrong. Now, by the way, why did Eli get it all wrong? This, by the way, the Navi also tells us a little bit of the unraveling of Eli HaKohen himself. Remember, again, we were introduced to the fact that Eli's sons Chafni and Pinchas were on duty in the Mishkan. Chafni and Pinchas, we'll see later on, unfortunately, did a number of inappropriate things. Eli's hold on the Mishkan is also unraveling. So what happens? Eli comes in, the Medrash writes, Chana comes into the Mishkan. Eli doesn't know what to do with this woman. So he doesn't know what's going on over here. Such a strange sight. Now again, he must have known her. Why must he have known her? Because again, her husband was one of the most famous Jews, Elkanah, and they were coming here. Remember, there aren't so many people coming. So he must have known her. This is strange. What's going on? So what does he do? Writes the Gemara, what does he do? He consults the Urim Tumim. Remember again, the Kohen Gadol wore a breastplate. That breastplate had 12 stones. On those stones were written the names of the Shvatim, the names of the tribes, and the names of the Olives, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So inside, remember, those stones were mounted on a gold backing. That gold backing was sewed onto a fabric backdrop. There was a fold. In that fold was written the 72-letter name of God. You know, that 72-letter was like the battery. Was like the battery for the Urim V'Tumim. That gave the Kohen Gadol, as well as the king, the ability to ask the Urim V'Tumim questions. So what happened? Eli consults the Urim V'Tumim. He says, what's the story with this woman? So what letters light up? Shin, Chaf, Reish, He. Shin, Chaf, Reish, He spells? Shikora. Except, in order to properly decipher the Urim V'Tumim, you had to have a degree of Ruach HaKodesh. And what Eli didn't understand, the Yvonne was giving him the words, but he didn't know how to unscramble them. It wasn't Shikora, it was Kshera. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Eli HaKohen, this woman is a tzadeyas. And Eli, I'm just telling you, what you are seeing unfolding in front of you is probably one of the purest tefillos the world has ever experienced. And so Chana says, no, my master, I am not drunk. No, right? I didn't drink any wine or intoxicating beverage. I'm pouring out my soul before God. And this is amazing. Chana says, I'll just use the English, deliver not your bondsman before the unscrupulous woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and my vexation have I spoken until now. And Chana says something absolutely amazing. Chana says, to be honest, not just that I'm sad, I'm angry. I'm angry at the Ribono Shel Olam because I don't understand why he hasn't given me this bracha. I'm angry at God because all I'm asking is for something so natural. And I'm not asking for it from me. I'm asking it ultimately to give back. And why won't he give it to me? And finally, again, the section concludes 23. Vayan Eli Vayomer Lechila Shalom, go in peace. Velokei Yisrael Yitin Es Shelaseich Asher Sha'alta Me'eto. Eli gives her a beautiful bracha. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give you all you ask for. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give you Kol Mishalos Liveich Letova. Vatomer Timtsa Shivchascha Chin Be'enecha Vateilech Ha'ish LeDarka Vatocho Upaneha Lohaya Lo'od. And Chana leaves the Mishkan upbeat. Chana leaves the Mishkan because there's something inside of her that says, you know what? I don't know why. But I just feel for the first time that maybe my tefillos were heard on high. Maybe this is when everything is going to change. And so you see, and of course we know that Chana is blessed with the great bracha of giving birth to a little boy, Shmuel. She follows through on her promise. She delivers Shmuel right after he's weaned. At the age of 3, she delivers him right back up to Eli HaKohen. Right back. Can you imagine that? She waited all of those years. Age of 3, she gives him back. And I just tell you a beautiful postscript. And then one more postscript, and then we're really done. You know, the Navi says that he went ahead and she made him a mehil. She made him a coat. And what's amazing, I think I spoke about this in Shabbat Shuvah. So, you know what's amazing is Shmuel HaNavi, whenever he's identified, he's always identified by the me'il. He's always identified by the coat. And Chazal said there was an incredible miracle that the coat that his mother made for him grew with him as he matured. Shmuel HaNavi had one coat throughout his entire life because that coat, understand, that coat was the coat of maternal love. That coat represented maternal aspirations, yearning, and pining. That coat represented a boundless reservoir of maternal love. You know, Chana didn't get to raise her child like a mother gets to raise her child. Chana was not there for every single milestone. Chana was not there for every single moment. Because Chana gave back her bracha to the Ribono Shel Olam.
So as we leave this beautiful restaurant and go from the Gashmius to the Ruchnius, although again, the beautiful part in Eretz Yisrael is that even your Gashmius is also Ruchnius, understand the power of this place. This is the place of tenacity. This is the place of resolve. Shiloh is the place that reminds us that if you will it, and it's meaningful, you can make it happen. Shiloh is the place that reminds us, Ein davar omid b'fnei haratzon. Nothing stands in the way of the will of a Jew. This was the place where Elkanah's ratzon, Elkanah's will was manifest. This is the place that Hannah's will was manifest. And so, in a little bit, as we get to the Makom HaMishkan, we all have things we have to daven for. Right? Who amongst us doesn't daven for Tamara Dina Baskena Shulamis? Who's not davening for Tani Maskutz? Who's not davening for different people with health issues? For Shiduchin, for children, for Parnasa? We all have a list. And by the way, if you don't have a list, you should. We have a couple of minutes. Compile it. Write it down. Or WhatsApp a group and ask them to send you in names. And if you daven, if we daven here with real kavana, if we daven here with real resolve, if we say to Ribon Shel Olam, Mechana said, Ribon Shel Olam, I'm asking for these brachos, not because I'm one, not because give me, give me, but because if you give me, I give you. Because if you give a refuah shleima, those cholim could continue to serve you. Because if you allow those to find their zivo kalgo and give children to those, give parasa, they could give you. If we daven like Chana daven, if we daven like Elkanah daven, if we truly plow our ratzon into this experience, there's no telling what we could walk away with. All right. But this is only our first installment. But in Eretz Hashem, we have a beautiful experience ahead of us. I think we'll bench and then...
Here's the plan. Hillel has said it's easier for us to do the